I'm Nathan.
And I'm Ashley.
And this is SciFinders. And tonight we're talking about analog versus digital.
So, what have we been doing the last few days?
Well, I don't know what you've been doing, but I've been... we're at a conference.
We're at a conference. But after the conference, we have been...
going to comic stores and bookstores and toy stores and all the places that you would expect to take, like, a 10-year-old child or a 30-year-old geek. So, yeah.
So we've been doing that, and what we've ended up doing a lot has been digging through boxes of old comic books. And, in your case, VHS and movies and all these things. So, and you know, by digging, we found some really neat things that we may not have found before.
Yeah. Like, one of the highlights of what I found this week...
And this is. I think this is the highlight of what anyone found.
Yes. it was a beta, like a Betamax of Beastmaster.
So, for those of you listening that may not know, Betamax is something that kind of came out the same time as VHS. It's a little smaller, actually better quality, but VHS won in that the Beta VHS war, and the format war, as it were.
Yeah. It's kind of like when Blu-ray and HD DVD.
Yeah. So similar kind of thing. I think Beta was Sony, and it's actually one of the few times Sony has lost the war. No, that's not true. Sony usually loses the war, but they lose it on purpose. Mini disc could have won over CD. Sure. That's neither here nor there.
but yeah, I found a Beastmaster beta. And I picked it up for $1.
Not something you were looking for.
Oh, no, of course not. Well, and like that's one of the weird things. Because we're going to be talking about lots of different types of analog versus digital. But I was thinking about that because one of the other things that I did today was I bought something on Amazon. Something that I really wanted, something that I had intentionally been saving up for, and it was just the cheapest and best place to get it. I was not looking for betas on Amazon. You know, like, I wouldn't go to an online store intentionally seeking Beastmaster out. But going to a brick-and-mortar store, like, looking through all this stuff, digging through, looking for those quote-unquote treasures, it's more of like the prize, the victory of the hunt, rather than just, I went online, I found it, and I bought it, and now it's mine.
Right. So it is, you know, there is something about going into one of these stores, a comic book store, or a collector's store, or a used book store, and not knowing, because those aren't even your big box stores where you kind of know what's going to be there. It's not like you're going to get a new Ninja Turtle figure that you're looking for that's going to be out on the shelves. You're just going to see what they have.
Yeah.
They might have something you're looking for. They may not. In the case of where we were, 50 cent bins of comic books where you're just digging through and hoping they have something to see what they have. Just something that's weird. You know, a few things that I found were those, in the 90s and 80s, there were a lot of, like, these knockoff comics that were trying to, like, capitalize on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and, I don't know, the something-something Gene Bunnies or whatever.
Well, yeah, like, one of the ones was the, like, it was somewhere between G.I. Joe and Ninja Turtles. And
right.
It was G.I. Jackrabbit.
G.I. Jackrabbit, yeah.
Yeah. Which I was pretty excited about, because it's one of those things that's so ridiculous, and I wouldn't intentionally be looking for it. But when you stumble across it, it's like, man, this is awesome. Or like last time, we were talking about those Amalgam comic books.
Right, and you so actually we found a few Amalgam books that we were, from what we were talking about a few weeks ago. So yeah, that's one of I think that's a really good example of how you get from digital, or you go from this kind of real world analog, if you will, to a digital format. And you did Amazon. I also bought something on Amazon. I bought some Ecto Cooler. They finally got it back in stock, so I ordered that.
Ridiculous.
And that's going to be in stock rather soon, or it's going to be in my house really soon. But that's the other thing about analog versus that in terms of buying in store, is I can go to the store and walk away with it from my house, or go to my house. They're getting really close to being able to do that with digital. You know, there's talks of the Amazon drones and those kinds of things. And there's a, at Christmas time in bigger, in larger cities, there is this kind of Amazon in an hour thing.
Yeah.
Where you type it in, you do it, and then it's at your house in an hour. They have couriers or whatever. So they're trying to mimic
that.
Something
that just means they already have the stuff where you live. It's just when you put in an order, there's some dude sitting back in a chair just like, nah, screw them. They can wait.
So that is something that is, you know, the analog is getting better. Now, when I think, when you first proposed this topic, analog versus digital, the thing that I think about is a watch with hands versus a digital watch.
You know, that is one of the only things that I did not even cross my mind.
And that's what I, and you know, we had talked about maybe me drawing some things for the graphic on these podcasts, and what I started working on drawing was a clock with a watch, or with a traditional face, with a sword, battling a clock with a digital face with a sword.
You know what's sad? Watches to me, just...
Oh, they're all analog.
In general, really. A watch is analog. So even a quote-unquote digital watch, to me, it's just like, what are you doing with that old thing?
Well, I mean, on the other hand, okay, let's say watches are the same, or all analog. Then you've got your phone.
Yeah.
You wouldn't call that analog, I don't think. Maybe looking at the clock is analog, but...
Well, you've got the, like, the iPhone watch.
So the Apple watch, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, so this kind of battle between digital and analog, and, you know, we talked about last time, I think, or a couple times ago, we talked about digital art versus the traditional tactile kind of art. And you could go the same route with, you know... I'll go back a few years to, like, books on a Kindle.
Yeah.
And versus a paper book. That was a big debate. Well, I like my stuff in, you know, this format. There's people who still really prefer vinyl records over a digital file.
Well, and I'm one of those people. Like, I love vinyls. Now, part of that, maybe well, I'm I mean, a
some of it
of
is you're holding in your hand and you see this big, you have this big thing to look at. This big this big big image to look at because you've got your album cover and those kinds of things. But there's some people, and actually, there's been a big thing about a few years ago. This is going on about 2 years ago now. Neil Young, like, sponsored this or helped create this new audio file format that would mimic the quality that you would get from something like a vinyl record.
Yeah. Well, and, like, that's one of the things that I love about vinyls is they really do have a much better audio quality. They don't retain that audio quality as well.
And scratch.
Oh, I'm not talking about old records. Like, new records.
Oh, sure.
It is a much, much better audio quality. Now, also talking about old records, I mean, part of the reason that I love them so much is... when I was growing up, my dad still had all of the records that he had when he was in college and, you know, young married and all that stuff. So a lot of his records are old and hiss and scratch. And that's what we would listen to. So for me, when I hear some of that, when I hear those imperfections, it's a lot more nostalgic for me.
Well, same thing for me. I have my dad also when I grew up. I grew up as a Beatles fan. And I think many of us did. But my dad had a lot of those albums on record. Because this is pre-CD. It was cassette tape or record. And what I had is I have a lot of recordings to this day on cassette tapes from records.
Yeah.
So I've got all of those, kind of those things that I listened to over and over and over and over. While it may not have been on a record, and I did listen to the records. The White Album is one of my favorite things to listen to on a record. I had, when I was in junior high, up through high school, I had a lava lamp in my room that I would turn on.
Of course you did.
And a lava lamp in my room that I would leave on for days and ended up burning itself out. Well, but I'd leave it on.
You're not supposed to leave those things on.
Yeah, I know. I'm surprised it didn't burn the house down.
They are fire hazards.
Oh, yeah. So I'd leave it on, but what I would do is I'd go to sleep with it on.
Well, and, that's safe.
Yeah, I know. And I had it next to my record player, and it would go... And, you know, bubble up and down in the water and the oil and the liquid and everything's kind of moving and oozing. And it would reflect off the record. So I would listen. I'd go to bed listening to the White Album because I had a record player on a stereo. And I'd go to bed listening to the White Album, which is already kind of a psychedelic album. And then I'd have that that lava lamp playing off of the light playing off of the vinyl as it spins on the record.
And an empty plate of brownies next to you, apparently, as well.
No. Right. But in the end, I love that quality. I remember the first time I ever heard the Sgt. Pepper's album was on vinyl. It wasn't a vintage vinyl. This was like towards the end of the vinyl run. This was in the 80s. And my dad really wanted Sgt. Pepper's on record. So my mom went everywhere looking for it. And like I said, this is the end of vinyl. This is the late 80s when vinyl's on its way out.
My dad still has the Sgt. Pepper's that he had when it came out.
Right. 1967. You know what day it came out?
My dad's old.
You know what day it came out?
Tuesday.
Probably, but you know what the date was that it came out. 1967. What was the month and the day?
April 20th.
No.
I don't care.
June 1st.
Huh.
You know what other day is special on June 1st?
I think that some dude with his head up is... oh, wait, no, it's your birthday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, so yeah, that happens. It's on the... I share a birthday with the Sgt. Pepper's album.
Sure. So, so yeah, we've talked about like brick and mortar stores. We've talked about music a little bit. You know, like you said, what first started this was talking about your art.
Yeah,
started out doing some of the drawings. Now you're doing more of them on the iPad Pro. And you know, like for me, along with music, one of the things that comes to mind when I think analog versus digital is photography. You know, like when I was in college, I took a photography class that you had to actually go to the darkroom, and you had to actually develop the negatives.
And that was probably one of the last classes they offered that way.
Yeah,
I mean, even at your institution, which was a large institution, I would venture to say it didn't last much longer after that.
I think one or two more semesters. So I was one of the last people who was able to take photography and actually use a darkroom. After that, everything was digital. And
it's a whole new
world.
I mean, it's a whole new style. I mean, you go from using that darkroom to using software to do many of the same things,
yeah,
and maybe more things. But,
well,
yeah.
and like that's actually what I bought today was a new DSLR. And
oh, so you got it?
Yeah, and I cannot wait. I'm so excited about that. I mean, I've wanted
it's
a
more
nice...
money than he has spent his entire life on a single
that's
thing.
That's not true.
Okay, and you have a car.
It's like 2 or 3 years worth of saving up Christmas and birthday money. And anyways, I've wanted one for a few years, but yeah, because it is a bigger expense, and because it's something that I actually enjoy. Doing photography and not just taking pictures, because to me that is a completely
different. Yeah, I mean, it's an art form.
Yeah. And, you know, I got one that has some different lenses, some different filters, so that I can do some of those more, I will say, artistic, you would probably say pretentious photos. But, like, I'm really looking forward to it because
well,
I'm
anxious
be able
to play with your macro lenses.
That's not a euphemism. Literally the lenses to the camera. Yeah, I'm super excited about it. Cannot wait to start to take pictures. Some of the Instagram people that I've been following lately have been people who have been like posing toys and action figures, yeah, and doing like, you know, very artistic, almost like it was a still from a movie type of shots. It's like, oh, that's cool. I can do some of that stuff. But yeah, with all of these things. Photos, art, music, shopping, whatever. except for watches, because, whatever. Like, the thing that separates analog from digital for me, in all of these fronts, when you go analog, that's an experience. You know, like, going to the stores that we went to these last few days, like, that's someone trying to break into the room.
I think so.
Either that or, you know, drunk people boning outside your door. So, like, we would go to these stores because that's what we wanted to do. Just, all right, we're done with work. Let's go to a comic book store and spend hours digging through dirt
literally
comics.
Literally hours. Way more time than I thought we would spend there.
Yeah. Here lately, I've been going to pawn shops and thrift stores looking for old DVDs and VHS. Stuff that I could go online and I'm sure find all of it, probably even cheaper, but there's still just something about going to the store, digging through everything and, like, you know, finding that treasure rather than just like, oh yeah, I ordered it online. With photography, using a darkroom.
But at the same time, you're not going to build a darkroom in your house.
No, of course I'm not going to build a darkroom, but using one. Like, when I was in college, what should have been one of the easiest semesters, because I was taking pottery and photography, right. Ended up being one of the most difficult because I was taking pottery and photography, so all of my time was spent in the art house. Yeah, I usually didn't get to the darkroom until like 10 or 11 o'clock at night and didn't leave till about 2 in the morning. Like, that was a regular for me because I had so much other stuff to do. And so going to that darkroom, this was several years ago, back when Joshua Daniels was still a DJ on 88.1. And so go to the darkroom, listen to Joshua Daniels. You know, it was just, I still have very, very fond memories of developing the negatives and the pictures. They didn't really turn out that great because it's difficult and it takes a lot of practice and a lot of skill. But just doing that, like, that's what I remember. Once I get this new camera, it's going to be like, oh, yeah, I can take literally hundreds of pictures. I mean, when we go to cons, I think one of the cons, I took close to 1,000 pictures because I could. And now going through them, it's just like, bad, bad, keep, yep, nope, yep, eh.
Yeah, but if you were looking at film, you'd have, what, like 27 exposures on a roll or on a, you know, maybe a little more than that on a bigger roll.
Well, and like getting all the stuff set. So like developing the film is definitely an experience. Now, when it comes to ease of doing something or quality or whatever, you know, that's where I think digital is a little bit easier, like with you and your iPad. You know, you said that the process of drawing has gotten a lot easier and a lot faster using the iPad, but it's not the same. Like, that's why you still do those art cards.
No, there's still something about something that's missing a little bit about drawing on a screen. Some of that's actually the way the pen feels going across the glass, as opposed to, you know, gripping the paper.
Yeah.
And I've found ways around that. I just got a new thing, kind of a screen protector, kind of, that is actually, it's not really going to do much to protect the screen, but what it does do is it gives a little bit of tooth to the screen, so as I'm going across it, it makes my lines a little more solid. So, yeah. You know, the thing I like about digital stuff, just in general, I've always been kind of drawn to computers for this reason, is all the tweaking that you can do to make it yours. Like, if I picked someone else's iPad up with the same software on it, I'm not going to have the same experience. And I like that. Where if I pick a piece of paper up, while, you know, you have different things like width and thickness and those kinds of things to the paper, you're still going to kind of draw the same way. You're still going to do it the same way. But I like, like the iPad I really like, but it's something that you tailor to yourself.
Yeah.
Any kind of computer is. Your phone, if I pick your phone up, I'm going to go through it and I'm going to try to figure out like where the things that I'm trying to get to are. Same thing with my phone. If you pick that up, even my wife, like if I pick her phone up and I'm like, this isn't right. It's all wrong. So,
but everything is exactly the same. Like, it might be in a different place, but the app is going to be the same app. Like, maybe. It's going to be the same stuff.
Like, it's not, like, if I pick up Procreate on someone else's iPad, it's not necessarily going to be the same, because I have brushes that I've stylized or that I've bought or that I've put on there that is different. I've got things in a different order. And order is a big deal with, like, the way something's ordered or set up as an artist, for the way that you're used to doing something will change your process.
Oh, no.
The workflow completely changes. I mean, and that's the thing. Digital anything is more about workflow than it is about the finished product.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. The reason someone goes digital on many things is for that, is for the ability to have the workflow that's most comfortable for them.
Yeah. Well, and like, I think for me, a lot of the difference comes down to portability. So, you know, like you said, I'm not going to build a dark room in my house.
Right.
Of course not. But I'm about to have a camera and I have a computer. So yeah. I can take, quote unquote, take my photo studio anywhere I want to, because I just take my computer and my camera, and there I've got everything.
Well, if you recall, when we were doing the Quentin Harrison book, I did that on very large pieces of paper. So, like, it was a process for me to bring that paper. It ended up being 28 pages, which was way more than it should have ever been. But it ended up being 28 pages. Maybe I'll redraw that issue. But it ended up being...
Good. Redraw that rather than drawing something new.
Yeah. It ended up being 28 pages. And the process that you and I had in doing that was I'd draw it, and it might take me, first of all, time. Like, I'm drawing on the paper, I'm doing this, and then I'm bringing those pencils into you, and you were kind of going over them, making some adjustments, telling me where to make adjustments or suggesting or whatever, and we'd do that. And then I'd go back and ink it. So I'm taking it back home, I'm inking it, might take a few days, I get it back, I bring it back to you, show it to you, you're like, oh yeah, that's good. So it's this process of me bringing these 11 by 17 sheets with me.
Yeah.
Then, like, finding a way that I can scan them in, and that was a process, to find someone that would scan it in the way I needed it to scan.
And even, I remember you talking about, like, setting up your drawing space at home and, like, having things set up to where you actually could draw on these larger scale papers. And yeah.
So it was a time of my life that I'm really proud of, like, the product that we got out of that. And I can go back to that time and I'm like, oh, I remember drawing that. Because I was sitting on my couch with my artboard, and there's something very tactile about it. Yeah. Like, it can take me back because of that tactile experience, where something that I drew last week on the iPad, I'm kind of like, where was I?
Yeah.
Like, well, and I like to be able to associate places and things. It's just the way I am. Like, it's something I enjoy doing. I like to be able to have that association between things. So that kind of takes it away from me. But I have, like, I can kind of think back to this one panel in particular. I'm thinking of a particular panel. I remember where I was. It was the panel where he dodges the bullet.
Right.
And at the end, he ends up on the ground. And I remember drawing that panel, being really proud of it. And then... mixing that digital in, I would take pictures of it with my phone and send it to you, and you'd be like, and that let us kind of speed that process up a little bit, where I'd send you a picture of it and you'd go, oh, that's good, go ahead and ink it or something like that, or I don't know. A lot of I don't know.
A lot of it.
We were learning our process together and that stuff. I'm in a much different headspace than I was back then, and I'm not so proud of my art that I'm not willing to, like, listen to that criticism.
Well, and you're also, I think, getting more to the point where you're accepting your art as your art.
Oh, sure.
Rather than, no, it's not good enough.
I'm in a much better headspace. And had I been in the headspace I'm in now, that process would have been a lot better.
Yeah.
But, so doing that, we were able to mix that digital and analog kind of process.
Well, even as you were talking about all that, you know, you kept talking about You kept talking about the process. Like, oh, God, it was such a process to have to bring in these papers and do all this other stuff. And to me, it was like, no, it was such an experience. You
well,
know?
It was. That's true. Right. I don't want to take anything away from that.
And you came back
around
to it.
That's what I was trying to say.
Yeah.
But it is. I mean, if you think about what was happening in that process, I mean, think back.
I remember
like when
that.
When we would go through that stuff, I'd bring my artboard, I'd bring my portfolio that I found a portfolio that I could put the sheets in, and I found that portfolio and it was big, and
you kept bringing
I had
me all of your sheety art.
Then I had my pencils, you know, all that stuff. I mean, so the process was compared to the iPad, where on the iPad I bring one little device in, well, and with the new iPad, the pencil. So I bring the device and the pencil, which is the device that you would use to actually put things into the iPad and do it with. I have that as opposed to this heavy load with things strapped to my back and pens shoved places and I left my lead at home that I'm using in my mechanical pencil and am I going to do any kind of like ink on this? Like what kind of ink pen am I going to use? All this stuff that we were trying to to kind of move back and forth. It wasn't something that was as easy. So, I mean, and you're right. It was a process. I'm so happy that I went through that.
Yeah.
It's something that I would never give up. I'm very proud of the product that we did. And actually talking about it, it's making me really excited about it, like about that process. And sometimes I do miss that. And we've said that. I kind of went from that, and then I kind of fell into doing these sketch cards. And I'm starting to do some larger scale art. Starting to do some larger scale art again, which I haven't done in a while. That's analog. And also the thing with having the analog stuff is, you know, that is something that you can sell. I mean, if you wanted to,
you can
get
digital.
Into selling. Yeah, well, you can sell prints of digital.
Yeah,
but you can't sell that original piece.
Yeah.
Because there is no original piece. I mean, well, there is, but it's a file. So yeah, I really like that. Yeah.
Well, one of the other things that I was thinking about in terms of analog versus digital, and it's something that you mentioned, like e-readers or using iPad, tablets, whatever. When I travel, I love the fact that I can bring one device. I can bring my iPad. And it has hundreds, if not thousands, of books, especially if you count the ones just available online. And I have all of them at my disposal. Like when I was a little kid and my family would go traveling, I would always have my backpack just full of things to do.
Yeah.
And I would always have to think about, all right, what books do I want to bring with me? And I would have to set aside like 4 or 5 books. It's like, oh, no, this one's too heavy and just... Am I really going to read this one? And I had to really think about it rather than just, whatever, I'll take my iPad and figure it out later. So I love the fact that it's so much more portable now.
Well, not just books. You've got movies and CDs and music and games and everything that I can take.
You have everything on it.
Yes, I mean, that's your backpack full of stuff.
Right, but specifically in terms of reading, you know, like... I don't remember anywhere that I was the first time that I read whatever on my iPad.
Yeah.
Like, whatever the book is, I have no idea of the first time. But there's plenty of books that I could think about where I remember the book. Like, even just seeing it on my bookshelf takes me back to, oh, yeah, that reminds me of the time that, you know, whatever, I was 10 and we were at the beach and I was reading this. Or it takes me back to the time that I was sick and my mom was reading... Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe to me. Like, just seeing the books, I'm able to go back to, again, that experience. And again, I think, for me at least, that's what analog v. digital really comes down to.
I think it comes down to that idea of nostalgia.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, which is the thing that I'm always talking about. And it is, you know, because you can find that book, and it's got a, you know, a... dog-eared pages, a stain that you poured Coke out and it was on there or whatever. there's all kind of, it tells a story, like the physical thing. Yes, there's a story inside of it, but the physical thing tells a story. I mean, it's the same reason I like collecting old loose toys.
Yeah.
I mean, because each of those toys tell a story, not the story of the character, but the story of the kid that played with that toy.
Yeah.
And I love that. I love being the archaeologist of those stories.
Yeah.
Now with books, it's a little different because I don't want someone else's stories in books.
It depends on what book.
Depends.
If the pages stick together, you don't want that story.
You don't want that story.
I'm actually really glad that you brought up toys, because that's one of the other things that I was thinking about. I think that we talked about this in terms of like movies and, you know, like playing with your toys and being really imaginative. And now it's just like, all right, this is what they are. Looking at action figures and toys and actual things versus video games. And like, it's gotten so bad now that video games, your iPhone. I mean, yeah, there's still gamers out there, whatever. But if you set an iPhone and like just a basket full of toys in front of a 4-year-old, they're probably actually gonna go to the phone. And it's kind of sad, you know, because like when I was a kid, G.I. Joe, that's my favorite line of toys. Love them.
You're wrong.
No.
But there you go.
I didn't say they're the best. I said they're my favorite.
Okay. Then they're not
also
wrong.
They are also the best, but they're my favorite.
The funny thing is, I think about the era when you would have had the G.I. Joes, and it was like the Neon Ninja era.
No, I had the early ones.
I guess so. You would have gotten this from your brothers, I guess.
Yeah, I started on Joes early.
Yeah.
But for me, like, I still have most of the G.I. Joes I had when I was a kid, and I would always set up very elaborate sets. You know, like, it wasn't just, here's a toy, you're dead, okay, on to something else. Like, I would spend hours setting the stage. Like, I would go over here, just, all right, here's the G.I. Joe base, and I would get things set up. I would go to a different side of the room and get the Cobra base set up. And I couldn't spend too long in either location because it was like, oh, what are the other guys doing? And I would have to go back to the other side. Even if it was just like, oh man, these guys haven't eaten in like forever. This one's going to be over here like in the mess hall making food.
Wow.
I gave them stories. When they had battles, it was a battle. Like I spent such a long time actually building up these scenes. In fact, if there's any G.I. Joes that I lost, it's because they are still somewhere outside when I set up like an epic battle scene, and one of them is just like sitting up in a tree waiting for a Cobra to come by.
Still waiting.
It's going to be waiting for a while. But like playing with actual figures, I was able to be so much more imaginative, and I could create the world that they were existing in. And yeah, you have video games that are sandbox games that you can do a lot, but there's still limits. There's still restrictions. There's still just, this is what it is. And again, like, yeah, it's a lot easier to just take your cell phone or Game Boy or whatever with you. But it doesn't have, to me, that same experience as actually playing with toys and setting up a scene. And yeah, I actually didn't think about that one until we were talking in terms of analog v. digital.
There's a game that came out a while back. Of course, it intrigued me because I don't remember the name of it. I don't play console games. I don't have a console, so I don't get a chance to play them. But it was it's called like Battle Chest or something like that. And it they advertised it, and the whole thing is that they got these franchises. So you have He-Man and G.I. Joe.
No.
And they brought them in, and you're basically playing these characters, and it's kind of like playing with these toys on this battle mat or whatever.
That's what they're doing with Lego now. Like the
Lego.
The
Lego and you know, games. That's the other thing, where they're kind of mixing the two. So you're mixing the idea of the physical toy, Lego Dimensions, for instance, or, you know, you've got Skylanders and the Disney
not
thing.
Not anymore, you don't.
Oh, did they cancel Skylanders?
Didn't they?
They canceled Disney Infinity.
That's right.
I think they just released a new Skylanders. I don't imagine it's going to last beyond this next wave.
Yeah.
Disney Infinity did get canceled, which it didn't actually last that long, and it was actually selling well. But selling well isn't what Disney wants. If it doesn't sell fantastically, then
yeah.
But Lego Dimension will probably be the last one standing on this. And Lego Dimension is actually the only one that's a true toy. Like, you can actually still play with the Lego men and take them apart and those kinds of things, the minifigures, as opposed to the other ones that were typically static figures that looked kind of cool.
Yeah.
But they weren't anything more than a static figure. So that idea of mixing analog and digital is something that's really interesting to me as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think that maybe not for everyone, but there definitely are a lot more, there's definitely a lot more mixing going on. Because I think anything that goes digital, at some point, someone's like, wait a second, if this goes purely digital, we lose something. Or like they recognize where each one has its role and how they can interact. Like even going back to audio, vinyls, which have a much better sound, most new vinyls that you get will have a download code for a for the digital copy of it. So you can still have the analog, you can still have the sound quality, but then also have the portability of digital.
Yeah, so I recently got the new Star Wars movie, and I was able to get that. It came with the Blu-ray, the DVD, and the, what's it called, the digital HD.
Yeah.
So I can download that, and I can do it through a service that I use, so in my case, Amazon, and I can download it to my device through the Amazon app. Or I can look at it on any device that I can log into Amazon on and watch that movie. So it's also having it, and that's one of the conveniences of digital things,
just
having it wherever you are.
Yeah.
No matter what device you're on.
Well, I love the fact that when I carry my iPad, I have all of Netflix at my disposal.
If you have a Wi-Fi signal.
If you have a Wi-Fi signal, whatever. Okay, on my phone, I have Netflix everywhere. Yeah. As long as I have a cell signal.
Sure.
But yeah, I have all of Netflix at my disposal. And I love movies. So I love the fact that, you know, when I do go on trips, when I do go to conferences or conventions or whatever, I don't have to worry about whether or not there's going to be anything interesting on TV because, oh, I have hundreds of movies right here. I love that. But I still buy movies. Now, in terms of the analog and digital, I've been buying a few VHS lately just because some of them are cool and just retro enough that it's like, oh, that's really
fun. Well, and we have a friend that's collecting and doing a project.
Yeah, he's working on some of that as well. But in terms of, like, watching movies, you know, I love getting DVDs and Blu-rays. I try to get Blu-rays whenever I can because better quality. But for me, there's still something about having that movie. So, yeah,
well, see, that's that mix too. It's a digital format, but DVD is still an analog thing. You're physically putting it in the player.
Yeah. And again, with that experience, DVDs, Blu-rays, they have all of those extras. And for someone like me who likes watching not just the movie, but all of the stuff around it, like how did they make it? What actually went into it?
Right. And that's why I love DVDs as well. Excuse me. And you know, one thing that I keep thinking about as we're talking about digital and access and those kinds of things, and maybe we could, I guess we've kind of done this topic before, but I think one of the things in fiction that has demonstrated this whole thing maybe better than any other thing is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Is the idea of you have this thing that they call a book, and it's basically linked to this network, and you can get any information about any particular thing within this format, and it's right there. The first thing I do when I get an iPad or a phone or anything like that is I have a Don't Panic background on my phone, and I do that because that's, for me, that reminds me this is what The Hitchhiker's Guide was about. It's this thing that's very digital, very linked up. You can call up information from anywhere. And, I mean, it's just like your phone. I mean, your phone is The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
And this isn't really the topic we're talking about, but it's just that idea of having that information at your fingertips, no matter what that information is. It might be YouTube videos, it might be drawing something that you can do digitally, it might be watching a movie or listening to music or telling the time, but all of those things done digitally on one single device.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing, but that still doesn't make the case for me that that's the way it should be.
Well, and it's interesting that you mentioned that, and we have to be careful not to go on too long of a tangent and basically do a whole other episode with this, but you and I both work in education, and looking at analog and digital, just how people learn. I mean, like you just said, your phone has the knowledge of the entire world at your disposal. How many people's telephone numbers do you remember? Like, how many numbers can you call offhand?
Counting my own, 4.
Yeah. When I was a kid, when I was like 5, there were at least 10 numbers that I had to have memorized. And, you know, like when you were a kid, for us at least, before there were iPhones, before there were smartphones, you just had to know these things. And because you had to learn them, you remembered them. I don't quite remember my phone number from when I was a kid, but I remember part of it-ish.
I remember it because it's my same phone number that my parents have now.
Right. Well, for me, it's not.
Sure.
But yeah, like now if someone tells you their phone number, you forget it within 5 seconds because you're like, oh, I have it in my phone. Why do I need to remember that? And for me, the same thing happens with education. You know, like, you have everything at your disposal, so you don't have to remember anything.
Well, I mean, the idea of digital versus analog education is a whole other conversation.
That's why I said, not doing
within that framework, even within our topic, like, there is the idea of, like, well, what's better?
Yeah.
Like, an analog education or a digital education, in air quotes, that is online or something like that. But then on the other side, and this is probably the only thing that you can really say this about, is they should be the same. They should be equal. Like, you should get the same information and have the same education by going to a ground course or land course or an online course. In the end, you should have the same outcome. And that's the thing. Should all things be that way? When you say, I'm reading a comic digitally versus someone reading a comic physically, like, should they, in the end, actually, this is a really good example, should they have a different product? In the end, they're reading the same thing. The experience is different, but should it be the same? Should in the end, do they have that same information? And if you're reading a comic, then yes.
Yeah. Well, and for me, it's not necessarily what the information is, but again, portability versus experience.
Well, like, I mean, we haven't talked about comics. Comic experience digitally is much different than an analog comic. Now, you could still have it that way, but I love reading comics on an iPad, and actually the iPad Pro might be the best comic reading experience there is, and there's actually been some articles written about this. If you, on comics, especially if you use Comicology, you click on that panel and it blows the panel up, and then you just swipe it and it goes to the next panel, and you kind of read it in panel order, and you swipe it and swipe it and swipe it, and you get it and you read it in the order, and you see this huge, the art's a much different experience, it's very large, you get to read it on this whole, the one panel, you get to really look at the art and see what's there. In a way, you can't really experience it, the other things. However, in the end, the reader of the physical copy and the reader of the digital copy ends up with the same experience. They just or the same product, the same end product, with a different experience.
Yeah. Well, and when it comes to what the information is, reading comics, I don't really see much of a difference. But kind of bringing it back a little bit into education, you know, like when I was in grad school, I had to actually use the library. Like, I had to go to the stacks of all of the old periodicals and all the old journals and, like, spend a lot of time actually finding what it is that I needed. I would have stacks, you know, 3 feet tall of books that I had to go through. Some of it was online, but usually if it was online, it was just letting me know, this is where you'll find it in the library.
Like, here's an abstract. Like, yeah. Go find it.
Yeah, so, like, I...
or get it from another library.
I had so much work that I had to do that research, versus now, if it's like, oh, well, if it's not available online, I'm just going to find a different one. But bringing it to an even more basic and even more rudimentary, you know, like, how people learn analog versus digital, there's such a focus on technology, such a focus on making sure that students know how to use computers and current technologies and whatever, that there's not really a focus on handwriting anymore. Like, when I was an undergrad, I had to use a blue book to take my essay exams.
I did too, yeah.
One of my blue books, I think that it had like 5 short answer and 1 long answer. The long essay was like a 4 to 5 page handwritten essay response as one part of it.
So, and in relation to that, my wife is a fourth grade teacher. Teaches fourth grade. They still teach them cursive. But it's kind of one of these things where they teach it, but it's not something, it's just kind of taught and it's used and it's expected to be used. But there are some schools in our system that doesn't teach it.
Yeah.
They don't even teach it, or they just teach it and you know, you just have to know it, but that's the end of it. That's the end of the usage of it. The idea of cursive, some people say cursive is a dying language or a dying art form, I guess.
Yeah. It's like calligraphy, almost.
Yeah, and it's just... I mean, my cursive... Now, I learned cursive properly. Now, I just can't write well. But my if I wrote cursive, because I don't do it very often, it's this weird amalgam between cursive and print, and it's a little bit of, like, my own characters that I kind of, like, kind of are the letters. Like, I can write cursive in my... my name in cursive, it starts with a star. Starshly.
That's not a letter.
No, but so, the other things are in cursive or whatever.
True story related to cursive, and if you don't use it, you lose it. Several years ago, I was taking a standardized test, and you had to, like, copy this paragraph. Or maybe it wasn't even a paragraph. Maybe it was just, like, 1 or 2 sentences. Like, you had to do it in cursive. And there were a few letters that I could not remember how they joined together.
Was this in college?
This was in college. Like, there was a thing that you...
Why were you taking a standardized test in college? Oh, was it your GRE?
Like
a,
yeah, it was, like... It was the subject GRE. So, like, the specific one. Which... They were probably testing on whether or not you could write in cursive, because I got to a thing, I don't remember what letter it was, but I had no idea how it connected to the next letter, and I just stopped there, stared at the paper, and it was like in a movie where someone's doing something, and they look up at the person administering it, and they just kind of slow shake their head, and it's just, okay, it's this...
And it was just on how to connect the letter. It wasn't like a big content piece.
Right. It was like an O into
like,
an...
ask me a question. I'll answer that.
It was like an O into an H or something. So like, all right, I remember that the O has the top. No, it was an O into an R. And I was like, I don't
do that.
It was like, I don't...
Because it just...
It was bad. But not even cursive, just using, like, pencil and paper.
Yeah.
What is one of the biggest problems in when people turn in their papers? Not looking at content.
Legibility.
Yeah.
Like, or people, forgetting to put your name on something.
People don't know how to spell things. Not talking about people who have...
I can't spell. I'm pretty certain I have some kind of...
Like, I think, yeah, that you just inherently can't spell. I'm not talking about that.
Sure.
I'm talking about people who don't know the difference between there, and there, because the computer... Well, because the computer fixes it for you.
Right. And or puts a little squiggly line under it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, whatever. Or like if you start typing in a word that's wrong and it just corrects it. Or like even on our phones. You know, like you start typing in a word.
It'll just tell you what you want to say.
Yeah. It. I like it when...
You call me Big Papa.
No, I was texting our friend Lucas, who's collecting the VHS... And I was texting him VHS, and my phone auto-corrected to change. And I typed out VHS, and it was like, "Do you mean change? Because I don't know VHS."
There was one that I did. You know, you type these things out, and well, first of all, for a long time when we were kind of going back and forth with a group, I would mention you and I would call you Simmons, and it would be Summons.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one time I was texting someone, and it, like, changed this line into something very, like murderous. And I was looking at it, and I just happened to look at it before I sent it. And I'm just like, whoa, okay, Apple, what are you trying to do to me?
Well, you can always tell which of your friends really likes to swear in texts.
Because if you get their phone words.
And you start typing in and just, what's the first word that comes up? Just, oh, that's...
But it was, like, in this case, it was a word that I had, like, never typed. Like, it was just, like, it was gonna be, like, hey, I'm going downtown tonight. And it was just, like, instead it said, like...
Hey, I'm gonna decapitate tonight.
Yeah, it was something like that. I mean, it was just, like, why? Why is that happening? So then there's that whole idea of, like, digital changing the way we communicate and changing everything about the way we interact.
Speaking of how we interact and how we communicate.
Like, you used to write love notes to people in your...
You used to write love notes to kids?
No. You used to write love notes in like high school or whatever. It's like, do you like me, yes or no? We've talked about this before, so you do that. Now it's just like a text message.
Well, speaking of how we communicate and language and communication and how technology is changing things, what happened tonight when we were at the mall?
Oh man, I can't even. I remember, but what was it? It was the. Oh yeah. So we went to in the place we're at. We're doing this conference. We went to the mall afterwards. I wanted to go to a Lego store. I've never been to a Lego store, and there's a Lego store here. So it was actually in the. No, it was.
It was in the Disney store.
We went to the Disney
store. Two grown men in the Disney store.
Looking for Star Wars toys.
Whatever. We were two grown men in the Disney store.
So there are these teeny boppers, right? And I'd say they were in their late teens. There's a group. There's a lot of 20 somethings. There was some kind of event going on, and they were in this store. And I'm in there. I'm looking around, you know, looking at what they had. And all of a sudden, this kid says something, and then just goes, "JK." And what did I say to you?
I have to go right now.
And I was like, I'm like, do you know why? And he's like, yes, I do. Yes, I absolutely do.
Well, I said it's one of two reasons. Either it's because of idiots not knowing how to use full words, or it's because you crapped your pants.
It was one of
those. So, yeah.
And that's affected the way that's coming from the whole idea of technology and digital and the way we communicate. Because when I text, I use full words.
Yeah.
I don't use, I
use punctuation, is how, like, grammatically correct I am in my texts.
Now, I've started using, as jokes, typically, like, I'll use emojis just to be, like, a jerk.
Well, now they have, emoji. They have a middle finger emoji.
They have a middle finger, yeah. Which I don't think it's on the iPhone, though.
It is.
Is it on the iPhone?
I've not updated my phone, and there it was. Just, huh, how'll it be?
Have to use that one from time to time.
That's a useful thing for kids to know.
Well,
yeah, like, there are times... What was so sad about today was this person obviously was not using it ironically.
No.
Like, they weren't
It was something
making...
they used regularly.
Yeah.
You could tell, because they said something like, I don't remember what it was, we should get this for Stuart.
Yeah.
JK.
Yeah. JK, let's get this instead. Well, and, like, I'll do the thing...
There was no stop. And, not only that... All the people around them didn't question it.
Yeah.
It was something that they probably all said. Like, that's become... I actually wonder if they even know what it stands for. If they actually think...
So, there's various sites that do, you know, like the... like, Damn You Autocorrect and stuff like that, which I love those
sites.
Oh, yeah,
I love... that side particularly.
But there was another one of, like, why parents shouldn't text.
Yes, that one's a great one, too.
And there was one...
Or what is it? Crap, my mom's on Facebook? Or
yeah.
Something like that.
Well, this one was, like, why parents shouldn't text, and a mother kept putting LOL in the text. And it was a very awkward use of LOL because she was talking about the death of a loved one. And then it was pointed out to her that that means laughing out loud. She's like, oh, I thought it meant lots of love. So, like, when it comes to acronyms, when it comes to text speak, like, people don't know what it means. For the longest time, I did not think that FTW was for the win. I thought that it was something much more akin to WTF. And I would see it on things just, what? And yeah, like, there are times that I'll use text speak ironically. Like, if someone is, whatever, just being some hipster or some millennial, I'll be like, oh, hehehe, autolols, and noobs, and, you know. But when it comes to an actual conversation, I just, it makes my brain hurt. To not use real words and whatever. But yeah, that is what...
LOL.
I hate you so much right now.
JK.
That is the world that people are growing up in. And that... It's a lot easier when you're texting someone to put BRB, LOL, JK than it is to actually type stuff out. It's a lot easier to just put an emoji rather than using your words. So yeah, it's a lot easier. It's a lot faster. It's a lot more portable. But I just don't see how it actually helps anything. And that might be a little bit further away from the core essence of analog versus digital. But yeah, I don't know. I'm always torn when it comes to...
I mean, the idea of what's changed.
Yeah.
Like, what it's changed. What's the idea of analog versus digital, what it has changed in our society and our culture. And it's changed a lot.
Yeah.
It's affected a lot of things. That being one of them, the way we communicate, the way we... I mean, you can go further with it, the way we get news. You know... Being a Doctor Who fan, when I was back in the wilderness years, I got Doctor Who magazine like 2 months after it was published in the UK.
Yeah,
like it took 2 months for it to get over here, and that's how many of us got our news. Now Doctor Who magazine, while it's still published, it's really useless because. I know the news before it's even published in the book. Now, they have other reasons why you might buy it. You know, they have interviews and look backs on episodes or classic shows or things like that and commentary, which is all very relevant. I really enjoy those things too. But the book as a news source is useless, yeah. As with any magazine, really.
Damn.
So, I mean, time and space and all those things, not in relation to Doctor Who, but just
time in relative space.
But time and space is no object anymore. And going back to the analog, I mean, the magazine or newspapers, even newspapers. Many newspapers are closing their doors because they can't compete with the internet. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
So that idea of, I mean, we've taken a much darker turn into into this topic, but it's a good topic, and it, actually we've got a lot more conversation out of it than I thought we would.
Well, I mean, even with travel. I mean, it used to be that if you were going to go 100 miles, well, you were going to lose someone to dysentery. Now, it's just like, 100 miles, all right, fine, whatever. I'll jump on my Segway.
You know, and, that's something.
And refill my soda.
She really needed a drink. That security guard.
Also, yes, there was a mall security guard tonight who filled up their soda without getting off of their Segway.
It was great. But, you know, how have we been getting around the city this week?
Cars. Poorly.
Yes, but how have we been...
Google.
So, yeah, so we're talking about travel. So, how many of us start that trip out with our GPS or our phone or whatever? I've gotten everywhere this week by not knowing how to get there.
Yeah.
And being able to, like, type in my phone an address or even just a place. It finds it. Now, it might take me... who knows how to get there, but it's going to be the quickest route.
Yeah,
and,
allegedly.
Sure.
And if you go off track, it'll reroute you.
Right. And how did... today, we probably saved 45 minutes, like, getting from where we were to our hotel, because it took... it bypassed the interstate completely.
Yeah.
In a city we're not familiar with. And so that... that's a good way that that's changed.
But yeah. When I was a kid, I remember, like, getting out the various state maps. Like, when we were going from Florida to Tennessee.
Your RANS map. You know, your big RANS atlas that you kept in the glove box rolled up. And
well, like, when we would go from Florida to Tennessee, we would need 3 state maps. And we would have to actually, like, look through some of the stuff. And so because of that, I know how to read a map. I know how to use a compass. Like, I know if I get lost, how to get from one place to the next. Now I can just look at my phone and just, all right, the arrow's pointing this way. I'm going to walk that way. Okay, I'm good now. So, yeah, like, even helping people survive, it's just, if someone got lost and their phone, God forbid, broke or ran out of battery, it's all right, well, they're a goner. And it's just, yeah, from travel, movies, like, how movies are made, that's obviously very different from travel, but practical effects versus CGI. You know, Star Wars, the new one, Force Awakens, there's no way that it would look nearly as good as it does without CGI.
But they also use that analog practical effects in there. They have the actual explosions and the prosthetics and the... actual giant monsters and spaceships that were built.
Yeah, and that's part of why it's as opposed to
The prequel
that is The Phantom Menace.
The prequels, I mean, The Phantom Menace at least had some practical things in it, but the prequels, by the time they got to the end, it was the entire thing was on blue screen.
Yeah.
It'd be like one wall and then blue screen, but the only movie that I can think of, the movie I think of when I think of that about completely digital is Sky Captain and the World Tomorrow.
Yeah.
That movie was done 100%, no sets. Everything was blue screen or green screen. Even more than Star Wars was. And it was... You know, it is what it is. It was a very moody movie.
Yeah.
Purposely. And, that's a digital movie. You get a different experience. What was the one, 300?
Yeah.
Was very digital. Oh, I don't know if it was completely digital, but it was really close.
It was pretty heavily.
And it gives it a much different feel. I mean, you're not going to get the same feel watching... Not in terms of story, but I'm saying this in terms of similar background, kind of, with the same kind of things. If you watch Ben-Hur.
Right.
As I put in 300, I mean, obviously, very different movies. Yeah. I'm not comparing that.
Well, like,
but, I mean, the idea is it's going to be a very different feel. But you're talking early digital effects, though. They're really practical effects, but they're superimposed. And then you kind of, you've got the Ten Commandments,
yeah,
which was done in the 1950s. 1956, maybe?
Sure.
Maybe even earlier than that. But you have the Parting of the Red Seas. You have early Doctor Who episodes. Doctor Who is the first show in Britain to use chroma key. The way they did the effects is they would use negative effects. So it's all analog effects, but they're superimposed in what we would almost call digital now.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's not. It's all analog. I mean, you're going through two cameras and...
And then you have, like, Ray Harryhausen, which any of the stuff that he did, nothing will ever top any of his movies.
Oh, yeah.
He's the one that did, you know, the stop motion.
Did all the Sinbad movies. Did all the... I can't even think. Jason and the Argonauts.
Wrath of the Titans.
Not Wrath of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans. Yeah, that's right.
That was one of the later
movies. Those movies are beautiful.
Yeah.
Like, to me, nothing is going to top them, in part because of how much time and love he put into literally
every
single frame.
Yeah.
Well, so what he did, like, they shot...
So I've seen some of the... I've actually seen one of those models.
Have you seen how they made the movies, though? They would shoot the footage of the actors and the sets and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
Then they would... that would be playing in the background. And then he would do the stop motion. So advance one frame of the film, move the stop motion one frame, do all this other stuff, and record all of that. And then play it back again with the forefront. So they recorded the same scene three times to get that effect of actual, like, a three-dimensional stop motion. And it's just... Oh my god, it could very easily be done now through CG and a lot faster and a lot easier. And, you know, like with the Avengers and Hulk and motion capture and
all
this other
stuff. Well, I mean, they just did a new Clash of the Titans.
But to me, nothing is going to top just that old, old stop motion.
And, you know, and like I said, I got to see one of those classic models. I don't remember which one. It's in the Sci-Fi Museum in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever get a chance to go to that, it's amazing. You end looking at the Alien Queen.
Nice.
And it's, you know, and talking about practical effects, it takes up the whole side of a room. Like, it was an actual thing that was created.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see all those things, but there's this one, and I went when it had just opened. So it was still very, very new, and I can't imagine what it would look like now. There was one artifact from Doctor Who, which I was very disappointed in. It was a gun from one of the very last stories. The Happiness Patrol is from season 25. So you see this thing, and, you know, it's not as small as you might think it is, but it's probably about this big. And it's one of those classic
foot
monsters.
And a half, 2 feet.
It's I don't think it's the Cyclops from...
Was it Medusa?
No. It was one of those. There's two monsters that look very similar. One was in one of the...
Oh, yeah.
It's
the one
early
that had,
ones.
Like, that horn.
It was one of the earlier ones from, like, the 1950s.
Even. Yeah.
But they had this thing. And so I've got my hands at about 2 feet.
Yeah.
I'd say it's about 2 feet tall, maybe a little less, maybe 18 inches. And it held up pretty well. This was in 2005 when I saw it. But, I mean, it had been preserved. It's that collection is Paul Allen's collection, the co-founder of Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And so lots of money going into that. It's right next to the Rock and Roll Museum that is his personal collection that he's done. So that's all things that... just seeing this thing is pretty amazing because you're like... That there's just, you know, under all that clay is wires.
Yeah.
Just wires and maybe some joints and different things. And it's just his mind. Ray Harryhausen was a genius in terms of doing that. I mean, from Ray Harryhausen, you get things like, and the obvious things like Gumby and California Raisins and all these inspirations of that kind of stuff. But also you get like the Muppets.
Yeah.
And I mean, because this is puppeteering on a much different level.
I don't think Jurassic Park would have happened without Harryhausen.
Yeah, you have Jurassic Park, and of course Jurassic Park still used a lot of. Now I believe they did digital stuff in that too, early digital stuff, but there was also a lot of like animatronic kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Happening in that movie.
Well, and like you mentioned, the Alien Queen. One of the things that would not have happened if that movie was made digitally, you would not have that iconic scene of the chestburster. Because that scene, except for the guy that the alien was actually bursting out of his chest, the rest of the
like
actors...
in real life?
Well, the rest of the actors had no idea what was going to happen. They thought they were just shooting, like, a lunch scene. So that actor and, like, the director, cinematographer, and people like that, they knew. The rest of the actors didn't. So when he's, like, all freaking out and it jumps out of his gut... and everyone there is just silent and, like, staring, just, what? That's their genuine reaction. And we wouldn't have that scene, or at least we wouldn't have that genuine reaction in a movie if it was done digitally, because it'd be like, all right, there's going to be a thing, and it's going to be surprising, so, act surprise. We'll touch it up later. And so, like, things like that, that... You know, I love backstories on stuff. I love how stuff was made.
I mean, like you said, that's why we love DVDs for those extras and things like that.
Yeah, and it's just like stuff like that wouldn't happen with a digital, with CGI. Like stuff like that can only happen with practical. But
and I think that's one of the reasons Star Wars was so successful. This last Star Wars. I mean,
yeah.
The original Star Wars, 77 Star Wars also, I mean... I think it's held on as long as it has. Of course, we've had the digital updates and the things that many of us don't like to admit are there. I won't watch those versions. Like, I have the DVDs that have that version and the original theatrical release. And I could throw away that other version.
I can't because I think one of them's on the same disc, so I can't really throw
it's
with
not.
Them
they're on separate discs. It's actually on the special feature disc.
Yeah.
So it has everything you need. Right. You have the special features and the theatrical release. You don't need anything else. But of course, those DVDs are incredibly valuable now because you can't get it anywhere else. Now, I think they're going to release it on Blu-ray. They've said they are.
Yeah.
We'll see if they
I can't imagine them not. But yeah, so I mean, with all of this, God, we can go on for hours.
We've already went on for hours.
Well, went on for hour. Like, we can go on
for like
hours.
We talked for like 2 hours.
No, I think just the one. We can go on for hours and hours of all these different things that used to be analog and are now turning digital, or maybe even stuff that used to be digital and now it's kind of retrograding and going a bit more analog.
And that's a really good... I mean, there's
Polaroids.
Polaroids coming back. Film, just in general, there's this push to, like, do... film photography again. Of course, records. You can go into many bookstores, record stores, and get not only vintage records, like we saw this weekend, but also new records of new bands, new pressings of old bands. I was reading something. No, I saw it on a news program, informational program, where... there's a company in like Nashville or Memphis that had made, they were a record pressing company, and they were down, they weren't out of business, they had stayed in business, but they were just doing very specific things for a very special order. And in the last year, they're pressing more records now than they were when the records were actually a thing. So they've become where they're pressing so many records, they've had to hire like 200 employees.
Wow.
Or something along those lines. I mean, it's just unreal the amount, and they went from like half a shift to like three shifts to get these, to meet the demand.
Yeah.
Because there is this desire, and it's not even a desire from people like our parents' age. It's people who are coming up and they want to re-experience it. Yeah, it's millennials. So maybe when they die out, people will forget again. I don't know.
Yeah.
When are they going to bring cassette tapes back?
God, never. Terrible.
Well, I mean, if you're collecting VHS,
even with art, like you used to have hand sculpted stuff. Now you have 3D printed stuff.
3D printed stuff, and it's becoming very easy. And that's the thing; it's ease of access. If I wanted to make an action figure or a toy or something like that, and I had access to a 3D printer, I could do it.
Yeah.
So it's something that's like, well, I want to do this. I have the ability to do it. I'm going to do it. As opposed to someone who, in that case, you sculpt it digitally. Many of my friends are sculptors in terms of they create art toys. And they sculpt the figures. And then they cast them in silicone. And then they make silicone molds, and then they cast them in resin. Some of them put magnets in them, or however they make them connect, maybe use the Glia system or something like that. And they cast them in resin.
Yeah.
But they're hand sculpted, and they go all the way through that process. So that's a thing that is kind of being lost to that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, we could keep going on and on and on about all this stuff. I was going to ask, if you had to choose, just in general, analog or digital, which would you choose? But, like, as I was thinking, should I ask that? It's like, man, I don't even know what I would say. Like, when it comes to experience, absolutely analog.
Yeah.
You know, like, I can remember when I first read certain books. I can remember playing with certain toys. Like, if I want a much more robust and just an all-around better experience, analog. Just about everything analog. But when it comes to convenience and portability and speed and just all of this other stuff, you gotta go digital. I mean, you're not going to carry around a vinyl collection with you, but you can on your phone have Spotify and have literally every song ever with you.
And that's the exact answer I would give. I mean, it's that whole idea of like, where was I? What did I do? As opposed to ease of access. Having it where you are, when you need it, with access, no matter what device you have. I mean, if I didn't have my phone, but I had my wife's phone, or I had, sometimes if I'm over at my parents' house, I have their computer, I can access all my stuff. Google Docs is, even an idea, the idea of digital as a way of, there's even an analog to digital. Like, you know, back in the day, even, this isn't even back in the day, but in an earlier day, we'd carry a thumb drive with 75 files on it or whatever, and it's like, oh, well, here's the file, here's the Word file you need. Now, that's not even a thing that I would even do.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just going to put it on Google Drive or send it to myself an email.
Like, someone hands you a thumb drive, you're like, what, is this gum? Like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Is it a new Dorito flavor? Thumb drives are still a thing that happen, and you need them from time to time, especially for larger files that you may not easily be able to get up on the cloud server or something like that.
Like stuff that you don't want to store on the cloud. Like, I don't keep tax information like that.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, paranoia. It's fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I we could keep going.
Right. I think we went on long enough. I mean, we're beating a dead horse, but it's a topic I think we both are very passionate about. I mean, we definitely both have very specific thoughts on it, and I've had a really good conversation.
Yeah, me too. So, hopefully you all enjoyed it. Come back next time when we'll talk about something else versus another similar but different thing. So, until then, I'm Nathan.
And I'm Ashley, and we'll see you soon.